Every week I find a new reason why I'm an outlaw. This week's been interesting. Mary called me last night to explain to me a new edict ...1,200 medical professionals, doctors and such, penned a letter in response to, I looked it up because what she told me was so preposterous that I couldn't believe it was actually true. I figured she heard wrong. She couldn't possibly have heard this right, but unfortunately she did. So these medical professionals have decided, in response to some saying that the riots and protests are exposing people to coronavirus and should be halted, they wrote a letter that said we should not use the coronavirus as an excuse to shut down protests and riots, that the protesters and rioters are safe, although the general public should remain home. Now, I'm sorry, that caused some of my internal organs to shut down. Severe liver damage. I mean, that level of insanity, and you wonder why, you know, we shut down for 3 weeks, services. But it became so apparent that the science behind these shutdowns was so preposterous that it's almost ludicrous to refer to it as science, to be perfectly honest. These were opinions that came into people's minds and they flowed out, and eventually I saw that every week we had declarations that contradicted the declarations from the week before. So I made my own declaration. So far, I'm not dead.
Hallelujah. That's right. I'm not either.
Well, there was that one time last week. But she was only dead for a couple of hours. Never forsake your own mind, your own reason, and the word of God, and just follow the edicts of others. Don't do that. Historically, we end up in bad places when we do such things. The title of this message is Shavuot, Endings and Beginnings. Shavuot means week of weeks, 49 days, 7 complete Sabbaths. The day that we celebrate on comes on the day after those 7 complete Sabbaths, and that's why it's called Pentecost in the Greek. It begins a new season, if you will. It ends the spring holy days and begins the time in between the spring and fall holy days. A time to learn about what it is to be free. As it is with nations, sometimes it is with people. Many of the new beginnings in my life began on or around Shavuot. I accepted the Lord on Shavuot in 1972. I was immersed on or around Shavuot 5 years later. I was ordained in 1983 at Shavuot, 37 years ago. I was ordained as the rabbi of this congregation in 1985 on or around Shavuot. Half my life. I was voted in as the General Secretary of the Union of Messianic Jewish Congregations just a little bit before Shavuot. And I was married to Mary.
Yes. On Shavuot.
In each case, I left my old life behind and began a new journey. At Sinai, Israel said goodbye to our lives as slaves, strangers in a strange land, and we began our life anew as the people of God. To give us an understanding of what these spring holy days mean and how they relate, maybe we can understand it as we put it in the context of America. Pesach relates to our July 4th, the day we were set free, the day that we were declared to be a free people. Shavuot relates to the moment in time when we, as a new nation, ratified our Constitution on September 17th, 1787, 11 years later. The Torah is, in effect, Israel's constitution, written not by the hand of man, but by the finger of God. And America based the principles that are stated in our Constitution on those commandments, statutes, and judgments that were given to Israel at Mount Sinai. Israel actually ratified the Torah. In Exodus chapter 24, verse 7, and ratified it with these words, Kol asher dabar Adonai na'aseh b'nishama. All that the Lord has spoken, we will do, and we will shema, hear, or understand. A rabble of slaves became a singular people, a nation, e pluribus unum, from the many, one. With the ratification of our Constitution, 13 colonies, all individual, independent states, became a singular nation, e pluribus unum, from the many, one. As difficult as both the beginnings of these nations were, the greatest challenges still lied ahead. The rigors of freedom are far greater than those of slavery. Counterintuitive, but it's true. You have to learn how to govern yourself. You have to provide for yourself. You no longer have a master who supplies your needs. And you have to avoid the inevitable abuses of power. When you are in charge, you have power, and that leads to abuses. Freedom will eventually produce differences of opinion, and how those differences are handled determines the course a nation will follow. Both Israel and America face the test of opposing viewpoints, and both here and in Israel, the northern and the southern regions found that they could not reconcile those differences, and they separated. And although there were different reasons for the separations, the fracturing of the nation produced the very same effects. The animosity between those regions persisted for the entire time those regions existed. The bedrock upon which any nation is built is morality. And there are many aspects of the Torah. There's history, there's mystical aspects. But one of the primary aspects is what? A moral code that determines how we should behave one towards another. And this morality must be shared and agreed upon by all. We have to agree on what is right and wrong if we're going to live together. A house divided against itself cannot stand. Morality determines what a a society holds to be precious. What a society attaches value to determines how that society responds to the challenges it will face. And every society faces challenges. Our nation adopted the biblical standard of morality as its foundational principle. This is a denial of the predominant way that most nations were set up back when Israel was established, which was might makes right. If you are strong enough, you rule until somebody stronger comes along and deposes you. And whatever you declare to be right is right. There is no standard. There is no absolute. The man who comes along next can declare everything you declare to be right wrong, and vice versa. Here we establish a standard of justice for both the weak and the poor, as well as the rich and the powerful. Now, I already know what's in people's minds. As with any government that involves man, those standards are never adhered to perfectly, because man is not perfect. But discarding flawed behavior, as long as a society can agree on which principles are right and good, there is a common standard that's lifted up that we can agree on, and therefore we can agree on punishments for breaking those standards, vis-a-vis justice. What is a just punishment for breaking these standards that we all agree on? You know, back in the day, we had good guys and bad guys, and even the bad guys knew they were bad guys. They referred to themselves as bad guys. It was a common standard. Didn't change their behavior, but they referred to themselves as bad. As these biblical principles have been eroded in our society, we are seeing the effects. We've become confused. Good is now called evil. Evil is now called good. The strong prey upon the weak. We don't have any standard. Many of the youth in America are desperate. They are disillusioned. They are depressed. Because there is no foundations. There's no security. There's no terra firma. There's no firm ground upon which to stand where you know where you are in relationship to everything else. Everything is fluid. Drug abuse is higher today than it was in the 60s. Angry, young, violent men and women take every opportunity to destroy, to loot, to harm others. And they call it good and just, while others call it evil. We can't even agree on anything anymore. We have become what John Adams warned about. John Adams spoke about the Constitution, and he said, "This Constitution is wholly inadequate to govern an immoral people." And we have become an immoral people. Yep. Neither the Torah nor the Constitution can establish morality. These documents reflect the desires of the authors. In the case of Torah, God. In the case of the Constitution, primarily James Madison. They wrote documents that reflect a goal to be sought after. Law in and of itself has no power to remove lawlessness from an individual. It is the basis of Paul's entire argument. The law can only point out what is right and what is wrong, but it has no power to affect a change in you if you choose to do evil and not good. That has to be the desire of the individual to foment within himself a desire to become a moral person so that he does not need an external police force to force him to do what is good and refrain from doing what is evil, that it is inside. That's why the Lord refers to the Torah as being written on the hearts of men, written on our hearts. He wants those words to become part of us, that standard to live within us. In modern times, we began our descent. In my generation, sadly. My generation threw out everything concerning behavior, thoughts, morality. Everything was discarded. Nothing was sacrosanct. Our history has been rewritten. Great men have been slandered, while outlaws have been exalted. It drives me mad, absolutely mad, every time I see one of these so-called fighters for justice wearing a T-shirt with the face of Che Guevara on it. First of all, it declares their ignorance of who the man was. He was a sociopath who killed hundreds of thousands, upwards of 100,000 people in Cuba. He was a horrible chap. And now he's exalted as a hero, someone to emulate. When I was a young man, the writings and the sayings of Chairman Mao were required reading if you were going to be a rebel. Chairman Mao of China was lifted up as a hero for the people. He is possibly one of the biggest sociopaths in history. Estimates run as high as 100 million people in China lost their lives at the direction of Chairman Mao. That's a third of this nation. If these be your heroes, violence will be your method of choice to effect change. In our new virtual world, real love, relationships have been replaced by images on a screen. Very little in our world is actually real. Violence, which is all too often necessary. There are times when violence is absolutely necessary. And this has been down throughout history. Ecclesiastes, there is a time for war. There is a time for peace. There are people you cannot reason with, and therefore you must resist them with force. It's called war. But violence, which is, as I said, all too often necessary, has lost its consequences in real life. Now everything is virtual reality. Images on a screen that are hurt or murdered. By the age of 13, some children who play these games incessantly have killed or murdered thousands of people by the age of 13. They've learned to laugh. It's a game. War is not a game. It sometimes has to be fought, but we have to understand there are consequences for taking life. When you go to war, when you come across those who are dead, when you smell the blood, when you hear the last gasp of life escape from the mouth, or if shot here from the chest, that changes you. It should. So that it doesn't become something that has no consequence, no big deal. It should be a very big deal. Now all virtual. Houses of worship, where once the places where morality gushed forth like a fountain, are now seen as the problem. The messages from these pulpits have then consequently been watered down and made relevant and tolerant to a society that has lost its way, that is adrift on a sea with no compass, no horizon, nothing. We're just floating. This does not bode well for us. Yet it is the very morality that the world declares to be irrelevant that holds the only hope for our restoration. Regardless of those who would rewrite our history, America is the home of the outcasts from virtually every nation. We are a far piece from perfect, but we have become the hope of this world. People who suffered indentured servitude, slavery, flocked here. People who suffered economic hardship, poverty, flocked here. People who were oppressed by governments, injustice, came here. America became the very hope of all people around this world. If you doubt that, it's very easy to determine what is a good country and a bad country. You look at the borders and you look at which way the guns are pointed. If the guns are pointed out, it means it's trying to keep people from coming in. If the guns are pointed in, that's not a place you want to live, because that means they have to keep by force people in that nation. America is a place where a man could ignore all of this foolishness of governments and such and become anything he wanted. It was drummed into me when I was a kid. Study, work hard, and you can become anything you want. My entire generation grew up with that potential. You can be anything you want. Ethnicity, gender, religion are no longer barriers, even to the highest office in this nation. We've had women run for president. A black man became a president. We had an Orthodox Jew running for vice president. You know who broke that barrier of religion? That was John F. Kennedy. The big thing in the 1960s was Kennedy can never be president. He's Catholic. And as we all know, Catholics swear an allegiance to the Pope. And so in effect, the Pope would be president of the United States. Then it came out, Kennedy wasn't that great of a Catholic. You know, there was a lot of kinks in his Catholicism. He was the first Catholic to even think about running for office. This was a Protestant nation. And we don't understand this now, but back when I was growing up, Catholics and Protestants did not like each other. If you want to see how much, read the writings of Spurgeon. He has a few things to say about Catholics. But with all of this, we are still framing our problems in a very narrow and improper focus. We are still looking at this, our current condition, as a black and white issue. It's never been a black and white issue. Every ethnicity, every nationality, every religion, to ever set foot on our shores has suffered the same humiliations and indignities from the indigenous people who were here before we showed up, to the black people who were brought here, to the Irish Catholics who suffered slavery after the black people. In the case of the Irish Catholics, they ignored that condition, rose to political power, and became the head of every single police department and became the mayors of most of the cities in the United States. And when they got in power, they visited the same humiliations and indignities on the Italian immigrants. Who ignored those, rose to power, and then they, in turn, right on down the line until more recent times, we have persecution of Koreans blamed for all kinds of things. Cubanos in Miami blamed for suppressing people and rights. They got here penniless, didn't even speak the language. They rose to power. You know, it's kind of funny. They bought Miami from the Jews. How did the Jews come to buy Miami? There were no Jews in Miami. Miami was owned by rednecks. And in the 1950s, and I remember, this is during my lifetime. I was 7 or 8 years old. This is not ancient history.
Well, I don't know.
We were what? I married you until death do us part. Remember that phrase. Just for those listening on the internet, that's a joke. I remember sitting and watching NBC News with my parents. And there's a sign that comes on. It's on a Miami hotel. No dogs, no blacks, no Jews. I have never seen the Jewish community so united in my entire life. It was the constant conversation on every single Jew in New York's lips. It reverberated throughout New York City. Most of us just complained because there was nothing we could really do to change anything. But some of the Jews in New York City were quite wealthy. And they met. And they went down to Miami. And they bought Miami, lock, stock, and barrel. And they turned those little hotels and motels into pretty swanky places. They made a fortune. They didn't put up any signs that said, no dogs, no blacks, and no Gentiles, because that's not how Jews think. They took down the signs and discarded it. The Cubanos came over. They worked hard, pulled their money, and bought Miami from the Jews. All of this hatred of groups reveals the nature of immoral people. America is a place that empowers individuals to prevail against immorality. We are actually able to overcome that. Of course, that requires a great deal of hard work, sacrifice. I'd like to read something I wrote as a commentary on our current condition and as a response to a rather preposterous accusation. It's never been a black and white thing. It's always been a good and the evil thing. The tragic death of a man at the hands of a policeman has ignited the racial flames yet again. If we don't change our paradigm, we shall never find the peace that we seek. In the discussions I've had, I've been told that I really don't understand what it's like to be black and live in the fear of police. Really, I'm a Jew. My tribe has been hunted and murdered in every nation that we've been dispersed in for over 2,000 years now. And for the sake of brevity, I will leave out our experiences after we were expelled from our own land. However, let me set aside for a moment the Jewish heritage of being hunted and brutalized. I was a long hair in the 60s. I experienced police brutality and prejudice in every encounter I had. Random stops and searches, backhands across the mouth, lady friends fondled as they were handcuffed, etc. When I reported a man broke into our house and put a knife to my wife's throat and robbed us, the response of the police was laughter. I experienced firsthand the fear of some 4,000 people charging my friends and I as I hung a swastika over the photo of George Wallace during the 1968 presidential campaign in Natchitoches, Louisiana. Not my proudest or brightest moment. The accusations of not knowing what it's like stems from narcissism, which is an inability to see or empathize with others and views events and situations only in how they affect that individual. This paradigm will always divide rather than unite. The proclivities of man is to use inductive reasoning in analyzing these situations. That is to argue from a specific observation to a general conclusion. And that method of reasoning is prone to wrong conclusions. The video of a black man dying, laying in the gutter with a white policeman's knee on his neck, is quite disturbing. In fact, it goes all the way to horrible. So is the picture of a gentle Orthodox Jewish man laying in a hospital bed in a coma, fighting for his life after he was attacked by a black man wielding a machete. His only crime? He's Jewish. That poor soul eventually succumbed to his injuries. The man who attacked this Orthodox Jew was black. Does that make me hate all black people? No, it does not. Does the actions of this man cause me to believe that all black people hate Jews? No, it does not. There are people from every ethnicity in this congregation, and I love them deeply. I refuse to allow myself to think or act in ignorance. 6 million of my people were murdered in Germany. Do I hate all Germans? No, and for precisely the same reason. That would be ignorant. This is not in the letter, but that would be retarded. This is not about the color of the innocent person murdered. It's about the innocence of the person who was murdered. Frankly, until we stop thinking in terms of black, white, brown, red, and yellow, we will never deal with the true issue. There is good and evil in this world, and it transcends color and nationality. Good is manifest by the children of light, and evil is manifested by the children of darkness. Do not allow yourself to be drawn into the hatred, this vortex of hatred of groups of people. But as the word of the Lord declares, the fear of the Lord is to hate all evil. And the color of that evil is always the same. As children of light, let us walk in light and shun those deeds done in darkness. Let us manifest the dream of a great man, Martin Luther King, who dreamed of the day when a man would be judged, not by the color of his skin, but by the content of his character. and for that letter I was accused of being a racist. I don't know how many ways I can deny. Apparently the word racist has taken on some different meaning.
A virtual meaning.
If I disagree with you, I'm a racist. That's not the definition of racist. We are now entering a new season, Shavuot. It's past. And how this ends up is entirely up to us. God has given us that power. Hatred of a group of people because of their color, their religion, or their heritage is immoral. It's evil. To see all whites as racist is as racist as proclaiming all blacks are dot, dot, dot. Fill in the blank. We have to part company with these thoughts. We are being programmed by an evil world to think in an evil way. If you want something to resist, resist that. I wasn't quite certain what all these protests were about when they started. Justice is being served. Not because of, but in spite of these riots. The officer who killed George Floyd has been arrested, and he's been charged with second-degree murder. That's a righteous charge. Those who are calling for first-degree murder do not understand what first-degree murder is. Your ignorance should not guide the justice system of the United States. We have degrees of murder. When they came out with third degree, I was disappointed. Now they've upped it to second degree as they have reviewed the tape and looked at evidence. The officers who were with him have been arrested and charged as accessories. And now as more comes out, two of them will probably receive a little lighter terms because they were rookies. Fourth day on the street. It's a heck of a way to start your career. They didn't have much choice. Justice is taking place. A man is dead, and those who caused that death are going to be tried. They're going to be judged. See, a crime takes a moment to commit. Justice is a little more tedious. It's a little more time-consuming. We used to have more expedient methods of, quote, justice in this country, but we gave up on lynching a while back because we found that a lot of innocent people were being hung. So we decided that that was not a good way to procure justice. I remember one of my motorcycle trips alone, I stopped in at Tombstone, Arizona. Always did want to see the graveyard there. Took my son back there. If you're going to Tombstone, I suggest you go wander through that graveyard. It's a place where you will, it's the only graveyard in the country you'll go into and laugh a lot. It's quite a funny place, actually. I mean, they have headstones there that you'll never find in any other cemetery. Here lies Lester Moore. Shot 6 times with a .44, no less, no more. If I get buried, I want a tombstone that reads something along those lines. Because when I have people come to my grave, I want them laughing. But there is a tombstone in Tombstone, Arizona. That is germane to this message. Here lies George Johnson, hanged by mistake in 1882. He was right. We was wrong. But we strung him up. and now he's gone. It's funny, but poignant. That's not justice. In this country, a man is presumed to be innocent until proven guilty. Why? Because the people who founded this nation lived under jurisprudence that saw a man as guilty until he was proven innocent. It's hard to prove that you are not guilty. You have to prove a negative, which in logic is impossible. Do not be so quick to discard this cornerstone of American jurisprudence. You may have need of it yourself one day. I'll tell you who will not get justice. The scores of people who have been murdered, beaten, and robbed during these riots, they will never see justice. Those crimes were committed, and the people who committed them will not be brought to justice. The violence we are seeing presently will not solve the problems that we perceive. In fact, it will deepen and widen the chasm that divides the peoples of this nation. You be light. Practice true religion. Defend the innocent, the weak. Defend them. Extraordinary men are ordinary men who live in extraordinary times and rise to meet the challenges of those times with courage. That's what extraordinary people are. It is not the indignities that a man faces that defines him. How he rises to meet those trials will distinguish him from others. Remain light in these times of darkness. God bless you, and may you be strong in these days of evil. Resist it and walk in the light. Father, in Yeshua's name, you have ignited, Ner Hashem, the candle of God, our souls within us. And I pray, Lord God, the light of righteous people who hold to your word, who see your word as moral. I pray that morality shine in the midst of this darkness, that it would cause those who are evil to scatter, and it would draw others into your glorious light. In Yeshua's precious and holy name.